Everybody likes guns. They just don't know it. Deep inside of his soul, there's a cowboy trying to get out.
Welcome to New Shooter Canada. Please remember that the show's content and word pronunciation is simply the opinion of the hosts and their guests.
Hello and welcome to New Shooter Canada, episode 121. And that's right, I've made it on 2 weeks in a row. Yeah! Hold on while I pat myself in the back. All right.
Can you reach back there?
That's actually my microphone I just tapped, but good enough. All right. So this week in guns, I did nothing, but I got stranded in Wisconsin for 34 hours because my sciatic flared up and I couldn't stand or sit. So needless to say, going to the range isn't happening until it settles down. So they actually sent a truck to quote unquote recover me on Friday.
Oh, it sucks, sucks getting old, doesn't it, George?
They were just going to leave my truck in Wisconsin and then have me ride back in another truck with another guy. So, yeah, it was bad. It was, oh my goodness, it was so bad. Anyway, so needless to say, I did not get out shooting. So that brings us to Thomas. What did you do? Thomas,
you're muted. You're still muted.
Sorry. I had to cough. Sorry. I didn't pull the George this week. I actually went out shooting.
I didn't pull a George this week. I'm forever now known as the guy that's got the AR that will never be built and the guy that's got a shooting podcast that doesn't shoot.
And the guy that apparently has to go to confession on some Sunday for something he did that he won't tell us about too. So. Anyway, I finally got that new red dot back on my compensated 22, and I was cleaning it. And I figured I've probably had that gun. That's a Mark III. I had it when it first came out because it still has the loaded chamber indicator on it. So the gun's got to be at least over 10, 15 years old. And the gases are really eating away that front port. I'm going to have to replace that compensator. Those slots are now round holes at the very end. So it even shows you the gas from a 22 will blow out a compensator. What else? I gave up and I took that Strike One apart. And I put it back together and I had it together fine. It wasn't me. It was still a gun. My hand loads jam, what it is. I took the barrel apart because I don't have a check gauge and my hand loads were actually not chambering. Some cheap, Browdall, whatever, some cheap factory stuff. They did chamber, but the Tula wooden chamber and the Federal wooden chamber. So the chamber is definitely too tight again. That's what the problem is. The one that did chamber was at military surplus. It did drop in, but the primers are so hard, it wasn't even igniting it. So that kind of ticked me off a little bit.
Just take a drum to it. Open up those chambers a bit.
Yeah.
No.
Don't you have a drill? just get a 9mm drill bit and on your power drill and, you know.
Oh, yeah. And be like Brian and drill out the squib with my drill.
Why not?
Sure.
It's under warranty. I'll send it back. I just got so mad that it was giving problems brand new in the box. I didn't even touch it since September. So since I was going to take the 22 part and clean that and get it all ready to go shooting for, oh, well, it's in my hand. Oh, I also did a mic too. So I'm putting the, on the Strike One, it's the rear plate actually holds the rear sight and the spring for the striker. Man, that thing really flies. I just about got it in and bang, it straight up bounces off the ceiling and lands behind me. So, oh, that's okay. I grab the spring and I'm looking, I go, oh, this should be a little plunger thing. A little too the flat. So I'm on my hands and knees for about 20 minutes looking for, and I figured I couldn't go far because the spring literally went straight up and bounced behind me and they hit at the same time. So I figured, no, it couldn't have traveled much further than the spring. And I spent 20 minutes to, up and down the hallway. I took my flashlight to look underneath the fridge. I got a bungalow, so everything's more or less on one level. And I look down the stairs and I don't see anything. I get kind of ticked off. And I start thinking about Mike when I'm looking for this stupid spring. And I'm just about to give up, but I notice a cat laying on the step. So I lifted up the cat, and it was underneath the cat. I guess Mia went downstairs and laid on top of it.
Springs just end up in the darndest places.
Oh, man. So I got it back together, and it says it didn't I'm going to send it. I'm just getting so frustrated with it. But I
You should have sent it really, a month ago.
I should have sent it in September.
Yeah, I know.
Listener Thomas wants it. Oh, he still wants it. And if he doesn't want it, Mike wants it. So I can get another gun if I sell it.
Yeah.
What else? Oh. So with the red dot, last year I was talking about how I ended up getting shooting glasses. I had one lens set up for my right hand, right eye dominant. So I had my right eye set up so I could see the front sight, and I had my left eye set up for distance, which worked out really good for target shooting, sitting at the range, doing bulls. For running and gunning, it wasn't so good because you've got two different focal distances. So it was really kind of hard to, because you've got to run up to see your target, but you're using your dominant eye to see it. And the two focal distances, it was really hard to do two eyes open. So it was screwing me right up. So that's one of the reasons I stopped running and gunning the last couple of years, because I was having a hard time actually seeing the target. So for precision shooting, the glass setup was working. So I noticed my right eye was just a little bit out of focus. It's been 2 years. I was due for a new prescription. So I went to the optometrist and he set it up. He goes, yeah, we just have to tweak the one eye a little bit. It doesn't look too bad for the distance. He goes, the left eye is still the same. That's fine. The right eye, we just tweaked just a little bit. And he said, oh, by the way, how the shooting contact's working out. I said, you know, I'm starting having a hard time seeing the front sight. And I said, not even the front sight. I said, when I look at my red dot, I'm focusing at the target. So normally the red dot is clear anyway. And he looks at me, he goes, you want any medication? I said, what, you mean legal medication? He goes, yeah, legal medication.
This is a public podcast.
I said, well, I'm asthmatic. And I said, I do use the rescue inhaler, the Flovent and Ventolin. But I said, the last 10 years, they've had me working in the subway system. And with the dust level, sometimes it's really difficult to breathe. And a lot of times I'll use my rescue inhaler once or twice a day. And he goes, uh-oh. I said, what do you mean, uh-oh? Because did you ever read the warning label on that inhaler? I said, no. Well, apparently an anabolic steroid will affect your vision. It can cause glaucoma. It can cause cataracts. And apparently I have a cataract in my right eye, which is my dominant eye. So he takes the light thing and he zaps your eyes. And it's to the point where it's too small to be removed right now. And it'd be at least another year before they could take it out. He goes, most people wouldn't even notice the vision or the difficulty in the vision. But he said, because you're so precise at looking at something at a specific distance and, you know, specific sharpness and the light bars and everything else, you picked it up earlier than, say, the average person would do it. He goes, you know, if you didn't shoot, you wouldn't have noticed it. You might not have noticed it for a couple of years. You might just thought it was a new prescription. So
when I went to the... So basically what I'm hearing is your questionably legal medicine is now legally medicine.
Well, technically, yes. If I wanted to, I could. But the problem is it would cause an asthma attack. So if I take something for my vision, then I'm going to need an inhaler after I smoke it. So it's defeating the purpose of doing it, right?
That just sounds like keeping what do you call the person, your pharmacist in business.
I don't know if I'd call the dispensaries as a pharmacist. You ever been into a dispensary? Nobody in there has a medical reason for using it. I'm telling you, they're all young kids that just...
Hey, listen, I watch border security all the time, man. And you get those, you know, those 20-somethings that still live in Lombard's basement going, man, it's my medicine. I don't know why they're taking my medicine. It's medicine, man. They say so on border security. It's medicine.
That's why they're still living in their parents' basement. Well, what I had to do with the red dot today.
Poor light's dying. See? This is why I should not be allowed on the show. Squirrel. So
when I'm looking at the red dot, normally red dots, both eyes open, especially for the new shooters. It's easier for them if they don't have to close one eye and focus. So I've always shot the red dot with both eyes open. That dot is not clear now with both eyes open. And it's really blurry with just my right eye. So now I've got to shoot with my left eye. With my left eye, I can see that red dot perfectly. I sighted in that gun really good, but I'm all cockeyed looking over sideways because I'm doing the same thing Sarah has to do. I'm right-handed. I'm having to use my left eye, and it's throwing me right out of whack. So the good thing is that the red dot works really good, and the compensated 22 is grouping now. So
that's the important thing.
Yeah.
So what did you do with guns this week, Mike?
Well, I helped Sarah fix her holster and mag pouches. We seem to have figured out the magic formula to make it work, or to get it to fit just right. We ended up taking her gun and we wrapped it in just a single layer of a paper towel, put it in the holster, and then just blasted the heat gun on it for a while. And then after a few minutes of that, I guess the gun had expanded enough, and because there was just that extra little bit of thickness from the paper towel, that it allows the gun to slide in and out good now.
Oh, perfect.
So that worked surprisingly very, very well.
Oh, she must be happy.
Oh yeah, she was. She was worried that she wasn't gonna get to use her new holster, right? She was so happy about it, and the whole big reason why we needed to do that, we shot a three-stage IDPA match this weekend, and the whole time she was pretty much a like gun goddess should start paying her. She's just everyone showing it off. Oh yes, this is from Gun Goddess. You should get one as well. So,
well, she is cute.
Yeah. And, so we did some dry fire practice, and I practiced with the reload with the revolver, cause that's what takes the longest for shooting a revolver for this weekend match. The match went relatively well. I had something happen that I've never had happen before. I short stroked the trigger. So I pulled the trigger to take my shot, and I didn't actually release it far enough for it to reset properly. So when I tried to pull it again, it was just locked up. That was interesting and new.
So how'd you fix it? Did you have to cock the hammer manually, or?
No, I just had to let go of the trigger all the way. But it's one of those things though where when you're trying to go as fast as you can and you don't let go of the trigger all the way and you try and pull it again and all of a sudden the gun doesn't work, you start wondering what just happened. Right? Because that's the big difference between I found with the revolver and the semi is anytime I ever had a problem with my semi, you know, you tap and rack it, and if there's any problem with that round, even if it's going to be like a delay fired round, you know, it's out of your gun. It's gone. But with the revolver, you pull the trigger again, and that round is just, say, delayed. Now it's just one next over, right? So now that round's going to blow up in the side of your cylinder with nowhere to go. So.
But with the GP100, is the cylinder face relieved for using moon clips, or do you just have to use speed loaders?
You have to use speed loaders. Okay. There is somewhere down the state that you can send it down to and they'll do it, but I mean, it's like $250 American plus all your shipping and conversion. And all it does is it allows you to shoot 9 out of a GP100. In IDPA, you can't shoot 9 anyways at your revolver. You have to shoot a minimum of a 357. Caliber. So 9, okay. Just a little bit too small. Because I have heard of the Smith & Wesson used to make a revolver that used to shoot 40 Smith & Wesson. And apparently that's the elusive best gun to have, I think.
If you can find it.
If you can find it, yeah. But I think the most popular right now is Smith & Wesson still makes a 6-shot revolver in 45 ACP. The problem is they only make it in a 4 and I think a 5 or a 6-inch version. We can't get
the 625. I had the 5-inch version, and now they only make it in the 4-inch, the Jerry Michalak.
Yeah.
They don't make the 5-inch anymore.
Yeah, so I mean the 4 is too short for Canadians to have, and even if you could find a 5-inch in IDPA, the maximum barrel length is 4 1/4. So it would be too big. So there's really no great revolver if you want to run moon clips in IDPA. But I did hear Ruger released their Super Blackhawk or something like that. And it's supposed to be a 45 long Colt that's cut out for 45 ACP moon clips. And it's a 4.2 inch barrel.
Well, the Blackhawk would be a single action though, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it's supposed to be like the next generation of the Blackhawk, or maybe it's the Red Hawk.
Probably the Red Hawk.
Maybe it's the Red Hawk. But yeah, it looks like a single action revolver, but it is a double action, single action. So
could it be the Chicken Hawk?
It could be the Chicken Hawk as well.
Sorry, I couldn't help. I'm joking.
I'm just waiting for Foghorn Leghorn next.
Yeah. So we were talking a little while ago about how Firearms Outlet were having their Valentine's Day sale where you get your dozen roses if you buy a gun.
Did you get some roses, Mike?
I didn't get any roses. Sarah got some roses, or will be getting some roses. I got the gun. Sarah had gone out and bought me a Remington Versamax.
Oh, she is really cute.
Yeah. So, yeah, so this is to expand my three guns. So, yeah, it was awesome. I was really surprised. I had no idea that it was coming.
There was no strings attached? You didn't have to agree to any conditions like having another child or something?
Not up front.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I haven't shot it yet, so maybe once I've shot it, she'll pull out the contract and say, you know, once you've shot this, you've agreed to these terms and conditions.
By the way.
No, she said it was just because she loves me gifts, so I got the awesomest wife in the world.
Oh, you gotta love her.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so that's pretty much all I did this week.
Man, I get told if I want to buy a new gun, I have to sell an old gun.
I'm just looking up what a Versamax was. I didn't even know what a Versamax was.
It's the Remington Versamax Tactical, so it's
shotgun.
Yeah, it's a shotgun. It's one of these kind of multi-size 12-gauge shotguns, so you can shoot 2 3/4, 3 or 3.5 inch. And what makes it so appealing in Canada is because the receiver is made to handle up to a 3.5 inch, you can legally have 5 3.5 inch shells in the tube, which means you can cram 7, I believe, 2 3/4 in there, plus a ghost load, plus one in the chamber. Mm-hmm. Which for three
guns. What's a ghost load?
A ghost load is, it doesn't actually go in the tube, so it's not in the magazine. But, you know, in like a pump action shotgun or something like that, how there's the lifter?
Right.
So a ghost load sits underneath the bolt. So imagine your bolt's closed on a shell. It would still sit on top of that lifter. So it's not actually in the tube, so it doesn't count as rounds in the tube, but it's also not in the gun yet.
Gotcha.
I don't know who came up with that idea, but it's almost like a way just to cram one extra round into your gun.
Cool.
Yeah. Yep, so that's all I did.
Well, it's certainly more than what I did, but I'm a cripple, so that's what I'm going with. All right, so guns in the news. Mike.
All right, so story one, shooting at the mosque in Quebec. And this is a quote from our prime minister. This was a group of innocents targeted for practicing their faith. Make no mistake, this was a terrorist attack. And George, you have a whole pile of comments here.
All right. Just before we went online, I was on the CCFR Facebook group, and somebody posted up an article from Vice.com. Now, I don't know Vice.com, how reputable they are. I suspect they're probably more of like a TMZ column than anything else. But
fake news.
Well, yeah, I don't know if they're fake news because there's a lot of accuracy in this report. It listed the people that that died and such, so I don't know if I'd call it fake news. But anyways, it's definitely probably agenda-driven news. But I pulled some quotes off of it because I'm sure in the days to come we're going to find very similar quotes and a very similar picture being painted. And I just wanted to kind of I was kind of hitting my go button. So anyway, so the first one I got here is Media Reports paint Bissonnet, or however you say his name, as a loner with right-wing views. Now, you're going to see there's going to be a lot of phrases here that are going to start popping up. Bissonnet was generally xenophobic and used the term feminazi. Well, within the gun culture, I've heard the term feminazi used before. I've even heard a local radio host use the term feminazi. So we got right-wing views, xenophobic, feminazi. Next quote is, two men who knew Bissonnet told Journal de Quebec that he was a Trump supporter. So we got right-wing views, xenophobic, feminazi, Trump supporter. He has, oh, look, here it comes again, right-wing political ideas, pro-Israel, anti-immigration. I had many, this is one of the people that knew him, I guess, had many debates with him about Trump. He was obviously pro-Trump. So here we got right-wing views listed a second time. Now we've got pro-Israel, anti-immigration, and again, Trump's brought up. The next one is, in this new narrative,
this is what you wrote yourself.
This is my commentary now. So in this narrative, if you're a conservative pro-Israel and, dare I say it, pro-Trump, oh my goodness, I think a puppy might have just died somewhere, and anti-feminazi, you'll be lumped in with this kid. Welcome to Canada, gun owners, your tolerant living country. Mark my words.
You know, what really ticks me off about the PM's comment about the terrorism, we had a soldier killed at the memorial and chased in department building going after our politicians. We had a armed forces personnel stabbed at the recruiting center. We had how many RCMP officers died out in New Brunswick? So the men and women that defend our country, that defend our community, they were killed in terrorist acts. But the PM and the Liberal Party or the government in general would not acknowledge that any of these acts were an act of terrorism. But when the PM's prime voter group is involved in an act of terrorism, internal, it's still, whether it's external, internal, it's still terrorism, then he admits, oh, well, it was the people that I like this time. So it's an act of terrorism. You know, it's a sad event. It's a terrible thing to have all these people killed, but to use an act of terrorism for people on your own soil when you don't even acknowledge the acts of terrorism that were used on the people that defend our land and defend our communities, to me, is absolutely sick.
Yeah. Well, and like I said, they're already painting a picture. So anyone that's going to be, that has conservative views, that mentions anything about being pro-Trump, if you're pro-Israel, anti-immigration, I don't even know what anti-immigration means. Like, I don't know. Even if you look at what Trump's doing down in the States, he's not anti-immigration. He's anti-illegal immigrants killing Americans. He's anti-illegal immigrants selling drugs and killing Americans and getting hooked on drugs. It's not anti-immigrant. His wife's an immigrant. But that's not the narrative that's being painted. And now we see, at least on this Vice.com article, that we have this piece of garbage that walked into a mosque, and I'm not Muslim. Anyone that listens to this show or knows me on Facebook knows I'm not Muslim. But here we got this piece of garbage walks in while these people are praying and open fires on a crowd, and he's right-wing viewed. He's pro-Israel. He's anti-immigration. He's pro-Trump. Like, they keep hammering away at these keywords.
Well, what the heck does Trump have to do with it?
They're trying to paint the left is going to try and paint an image that if you are any of these things, then you're the same as this piece of garbage that went in and shot up the mosque. That's the narrative that's being painted here. If you're right wing, if you're, you know, pro Israel, then you're a white supremacist. And I've already seen on a couple articles where they call them white supremacists, a white supremacist. This is the narrative that's being painted, and gun owners, because we're predominantly a conservative minded bunch and we're predominantly pro-Israel. I see an awful lot of pro-Israel coming from the gun community. Like, folks, this is what your Canada is painting you as. And mark my words.
We're pro-Israel because we have a lot of friends that are Jewish. That's why I belong to quite a few Jewish pages, because I've got friends that are Jewish. I've got friends that are Muslim, but why does it make a difference if you're pro-Israel or that you agree with the President Trump? What does it make you such an evil person? That they paint you the same brush at these nut bars that murdered these innocent guys.
Yeah, but that's the narrative that's being painted right now.
And then
I'm wrong. And I suspect.
Which one was it? They said they used an AK-47. There's been no report of what the firearm even was. So you mark our words. This is a key that they're going to use, and they're going to turn this key as tight as they can against gun owners.
Yep.
Have either of you heard any outcries that gun laws need to be changed yet?
Oh, they're coming. It's,
I'm not saying they're not coming. I'm asking if
surprisingly. I, of all the stuff I've been listening to the radio today, I've been kind of watching Facebook, and surprisingly, that has not come up yet. I haven't heard any outcrying regarding that. But it's hard to focus your hate on the guns when everyone's so focused their hate on Trump, and you know that this is all Trump's fault because he's spoken out against radical Islam and ISIS. And if you hadn't have used the word radical Islam, and I kid you not, I heard this on a radio today. I had two different callers back to back say that it was Trump's fault because he used the word radical Islam. And, in Obama's entire time, he never used that. And if we start using that type of words and start talking about ISIS the way Trump does, it's going to promote these radicals. Yeah, they didn't call him white supremacist, but the radical, I can't remember the word the guy used, to start doing this stuff.
Well, there are radicals in Islam. There's radicals in every religious group. All the Muslim people that I know, they're appalled with what's happening and what these people are doing. Because, you know, I've got four or five coworkers that are really, really nice, super people. And, you know, they're just like any other religion. Like if you look somebody who's Christian or Jew, if you go back to the Old Testament and it tells you, you know, you're supposed to stone people for doing this and that. Well, they don't do it anymore. You know, they've evolved past it. And same with a lot of Muslim community. They look at the Quran and say, well, no, that's, we don't do things like that. But there's radicals in any group that will stick to the scriptures. And I'm sure in Christian groups and in Muslim groups that will stick to the scriptures, say, no, this is the way it should be. This is the way the book is. So you're going to get radicals in any religious organization. Doesn't matter what it is. And the problem I see with the Muslim community is not the community themselves, because the amount of fear and terror that they subject to their own community, people in their own community won't speak up because they're afraid of retribution. Like if you live in Thornhill, Ontario, it's a big Muslim area, and quite a few friends live down there. It's a nice area, good people. I take my lunch down there all the time. Well, the people in that own community are afraid to speak up what's going on around them because they're afraid of retribution of their own community, because you're going to have radicals in there. So even the people that are progressive, like, you know, a lot of us, like a lot of the Christians, the Jews that are progressive, any Muslim that's progressive, they're too scared to say anything because they know the retribution might fall on them and their family. So anyway, let's go on to something funny. Let's change the topic.
Moving on. Sorry, it was just, I had a boss say to me once, you know, Georgie, you're a real paranoid individual. And I said, you know what? When you've been screwed over and effed over as often as I have, and as frequently as I have, you tend to see it coming. And it's not paranoid. It's just, you know, like I said,
common sense.
You see it coming. And as gun owners that have been shafted so many times by political groups and by the media and that, like, listen to the words they're using and the picture they're trying to paint, because most of our listeners probably fall into that category. And that's the image that they're going to now try to paint and justify taking away our guns, is because we're radical right wing, pro Israel, pro Trump, you know, white supremacist. So, anyways,
I'm all of the above except the white supremacist. I don't know why. To me, that's extremely insulting. Just because I have right wing views and I'm pro Israel and I happen to agree with President Trump does not make me a supremacist. It's like this Islamophobia that we're talking about. You know, I hate the term phobia. If you disagree with something nowadays, you automatically have a fear. Well, a phobia is an irrational fear. You know, just because you disagree with somebody doesn't mean you have an irrational fear. It just means you have a different viewpoint. But oh no, you have a phobia if you disagree with me. So,
but you know, like, all we gotta do is look down to the south. We see it all over the place. Trump, oh, he's a racist. Why? Because he wants to stop illegal aliens and drug traffickers from crossing the border into the U.S. So he wants to build that wall. Oh, he's racist. He's anti-Latinos. No. He has every right to protect his borders. Bill Clinton said almost exactly the same thing that Trump did back in the 90s, and he got a standing ovation. Mm-hmm. The video is all over Facebook. But Trump says it, and he's a racist. This is what they do. They yell and scream and make all sorts of wild, unfounded accusations to shut you up and to shut you down. And that's what's going to start happening in Canada against the gun owners.
That's one of the side effects when you're left-hearted. Things like that happen.
Yeah. Well, and they get away with it. This is what kills me. Anyways, sorry. You tried to steer us into greener pastures. Mike's awfully quiet.
He's just shaking his head.
Story two. Thomas, take it away.
Story two. An Arkansas policeman is suing Glock after accidentally shooting himself in the foot, literally. According to the website guns.com, Larry Jones, a cop from Cherry Valley, Arkansas, was injured when his pistol unexpectedly discharged as he was trying to outfit the gun with a tactical light at a shooting range in 2013. According to the lawsuit, Jones is seeking damages worth $75,000 from the manufacturer, Austria-based Glock. The case is being heard before a federal court in Helena, Arkansas. Jones claims that the Glock 19C pistol, which he bought in 2000, was sold to him in a defective condition, which rendered it unreasonably dangerous. The plaintiff is alleging that the Glock's decision not to outfit the pistol with a manual safety led to the accident. The manufacturer has a responsibility to give a reasonable and adequate warning of the dangers inherent to or reasonably foreseeable in the use of this pistol, according to the lawsuit. Well, if the ding-dong had read the manual, he wouldn't have gone through that.
We did an entire episode dedicated to reading your manual. Gosh darn it. Come on.
The Glocks have an internal safety.
Yeah.
Especially if it's a police officer, it's going to have a New York trigger. He's going to have to intentionally put 12 pounds of pressure at least, or close to that, on that trigger to discharge it. First of all, he didn't follow any common sense safety practice. You don't work on a gun until you make sure it's clear and unloaded. So the guy's stupid enough to try to put a light on the gun when the thing's loaded and charged, and then he's stupid enough to put his finger in the trigger. You know, he should have had the muzzle pointed the other way, maybe not just hit his foot.
I want $1 million because I spilt my coffee on my crotch and burned myself, and now my private's hurt because no one told me that coffee was going to be so hot.
Yeah.
I want money.
You know how many times Glock has been sued over stupid stuff like this and people who try and take their guns apart and forget to make sure it unloaded first? I'm trying to remember what book it was. I listened to the audio version of it, like, in it all about Glock and their rise to power and stuff like that. And it even tells you in there.
That's the name of it, isn't it?
Pardon? What?
Glock, the rise to power or something?
I don't know, maybe. I can't remember what it is off the top of my head. But, I mean, they even talk in there about how many times Glock has been sued and virtually no one has been successful because Glock will not admit that there's a problem with it. Because if you admit there's a problem with your product, then you're liable for it.
Exactly. So
the odds of this guy winning, like you said, Thomas, of the guy working on his gun with it loaded, like there's problem number one. Here's my question. If you're putting on a light, why is it pointed at your foot? Like even, like let's even just take into, like, think, okay, this guy's an idiot already. But at what point in time, when you're putting a light on your gun at a range, would your gun be pointed at your foot?
The gun, common safety, never point a gun at anything you don't intend to kill. So, well, obviously.
Well, there's that. Yeah, on top of that. But I mean, think of it this way. If you're at a range, normally the range designates that you can't point your gun anywhere other than down range. Like ranges are even, ranges have more rules than the four basic rules. So you'd imagine that this cop should already know the range rules of keeping your muzzle pointed down range. So we should have had that part covered. And then, like I said, even if you're working on your gun, you would reasonably think that the person would be holding up roughly eye level, working on it in front of him where he's doing. How is he pointing it at his foot while he's doing all this?
Well, the key word there is cop. Because out here, every accident and a range has been done by a police officer.
I just want to know how much gold was in that toe he shot off to equal $75,000. Like, come on. 75 grand.
Well, maybe he was an Olympic level sprinter and now he just runs in circles. Sorry, I should say smaller circles than he was running before.
This little piggy, oops, it's gone.
This little piggy went to the market and never came back.
Yeah.
I know. I saw one last year with a guy that just barely missed his testicles. He put it in the thigh, and of course he was disassembling a loaded firearm to clean it. And with the Glocks, do you not have to dry fire it?
Yeah,
I believe you have to open it.
Yeah, I believe you have to pull the trigger. That's the big thing that apparently a lot of police forces don't like, and why that's pretty much what I've heard is either a police force is okay with it and they go with Glock, or they're not okay with that, so they have to go with something else.
Yeah, I think that's why some of them switched over to the Smith & Wesson, because there used to be originally a little lever that you push down inside.
Yeah, that's what Smith & Wesson is. The M&P?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the way I think it still is.
Key rule here is keep your muzzle pointed in the safe direction at all times, including your own body parts.
Yeah. All right, so this week, Thomas got lazy and didn't do what's new in the industry, because he doesn't like the listeners.
No, that's you, George.
What are you talking about? I show up every week. I love the listeners.
So well, everybody else is doing SHOT Show stuff. There's so much stuff out there. Like Matt's been doing it. I Like Guns has been doing it. All the podcasts are covering the new stuff. We covered a few things. We'll wait a couple weeks until some more stuff comes out.
SHOT
Show. And I haven't actually looked at any. Actually, the only thing I looked at was I was answering a letter about different optics. That's the only gun thing I looked at this week.
There you go. All right. So main topic, operator error, not the gun.
Gee, we were just talking about that, weren't we?
How convenient that we just roll right into our main topic. All right. Well, don't everyone jump in at once.
Well, what I've noticed a lot of times is, especially with the newer shooter, when they get a new gun, they take it to the range. And the gun isn't performing the way they expect it. They don't have the accuracy they like. And a lot of times they say that it's the gun. There's something wrong with the gun. And we all know 99% of the time, there's nothing wrong with the gun. It's the operator. I'll give you a good example for myself. When I had that problem with my Extrem when I first got it and took it up to the range with David Coping, my complaint was the gun wasn't accurate. It wasn't shooting well. So, you know, he shot it at 7 yards, and at 7 yards, it would group fine. My problem was at 23 yards, it wouldn't shoot. It wouldn't group at all. And his attitude was, you know, more or less, I don't think there's anything wrong. He didn't say it to me, but he honestly didn't think there was anything wrong with the gun. He thought it was the operator. And so, you know, which is quite common. 90% of the time, there is nothing wrong with the gun. And he fired the shots at 7 yards. And I said, well, that's not the distance I'm shooting at. I want to be able to group at least 2 inches at 23 yards. He said, well, I'm an IPSC shooter. I'm not a long range shooter. So at the same time, one of the gentlemen, who's one of the top shooters at the club comes walking by and Dave said, hey, do me a favor. Can you put a couple of magazines down range for this gun for me? Guy says, sure. So he loads up, two rounds of factory mags and they set up a small target. Downrange is maybe 6 inch across. The guy put 20 shots downrange. I think he hit it 3 times. And Dave said, yep, it's definitely the gun. So that's an exception, not the rule. It's most of the time it is the shooter. It's not the gun. But he did what I would do. If you've got a gun if you think it's a gun that's not working, have somebody else shoot it that you know is a pretty good shot and get them to test the gun, see where they're grouping. And odds are it's not the gun, it is you. So then you may have to go back to the basics and start over again. Didn't you have an issue this weekend, Mike, about the operator and not the gun? Or was it Sarah?
Well, we both did. I had the issue of the trigger wouldn't work, when really it was just me not letting go of the trigger far enough.
So there's nothing wrong with the gun.
No, there's nothing wrong with the gun. That was definitely an operator error. No, Sarah had a bit of an issue on the very first stage. It was only 10 shots, so she should have 11 in the gun, so she should have had one spare. And I wasn't close up because I was watching the kid at the time, but I heard her shooting a bunch, and okay, and then all of a sudden I see her doing a reload, and I'm wondering, why is she doing a reload? She should have had an extra shot in the gun, so she should have been able to take a makeup and still been good. Well, she comes back, and what happened? And, oh, I don't know, and, you know, the first round didn't go off, and then, you know, I thought I should have been fine, and then I got to the end, and I was out again, and had to do a reload, and, well, so she's going on, and I asked her, so, was it a dud round? Like, you know, was there something wrong with the reloading? And she kind of said no. Like, she didn't know. She thought it was, you know, went on. You know, maybe you only had 9 rounds in your magazine. I'm like, okay, I guess that might have been a problem. Said, but that doesn't explain the first round. It should have went off, no problem. I said, well, did you top up? So in IDPA, when you walk up to the line, when you go to do your load and make ready, you put a magazine in, rack your slide so there's one in the chamber, drop your magazine, put a fresh one in, a full one in. And, oh yeah, I did that. I put the magazine in, I racked it. I asked her, did you check the magazine when you pulled it back out? What do you mean? Well, the reason why you only put one round in your Barney mag, that's what you call your magazine that you're loading the chamber from. The reason why you do that is so when you drop the magazine, you can look at it and verify that's empty. Well, she pulls it out of her pocket, and the round's still in the magazine. She had put the magazine in the gun, but I guess it didn't go in all the way, racked the slide, so the round didn't actually go in. Then she dropped the magazine thinking it was all in, but the round hadn't actually gone into the chamber.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And then because she had only loaded her magazine up to 9 rounds instead of 10... It meant she only had 9 rounds. She was too short. She only had 9 rounds, and it was a 10-shot stage. So she ended up having to do a reload because of it.
It happens.
Yeah.
It happens. She's just a little nervous. She didn't see the magazine properly, and when she would have pulled out, she would have checked it. She would have seen it, but...
Mm-hmm. Well, it's kind of weird, and we've never had this. This is our first handgun with, like, a magazine well on it. So the magazine that she's using at a Barney mag is just like a what would be a flush fitting, I think 8-round 9mm mag. So when you put it in, you kind of have to use your thumb and jam it up into the magazine well of the handgun to make sure it gets seated all the way.
Can you put a bumper on the mags for in IDPA?
Yeah, you can. Her 10-round mags have like a little bumper on them. I can't remember if she only bought 3 10-round mags, or if she bought more than 3. But she needs 3 to actually shoot the match, because you're always supposed to have 1 in the gun and 2 on you. So if she only has 3 of them, then she'd have to use one of these factory mags that she got with the gun.
Oh, so she uses that for the Barney mag then, right?
Yeah, she uses it for a Barney mag. It also makes it easy to identify, right? Because it's a different color, it's shorter, it doesn't have that bumper on the bottom.
What about you, George? Have you had any operator errors? Besides crimps, that little groove around the barrel?
No, it's a groove around the bullet, not the barrel.
Sorry, barrel. So you don't want a groove around the barrel. That's not a good thing either.
It was Hamilton, the HAHA, Hamilton Anglers Hunters Association, HAHA, had a 3-gun cowboy match. Or it was a cowboy match with /3-gun/ I don't know. It was the end of the season kind of fun shoot. And so I took my girls out. And so we were at just one stage, and there was some steel hangers, and I took my 10 shots and I hit it once. And I'm like, that's not right. Something's not right. There's gotta be something wrong with the gun. My daughter picks it up. I reloaded. She shot next, and ping, 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 ping. And I'm like, nah, something's not right. So I reloaded, and then I shot again, missed all the time. I'm like, there's something wrong with this gun. totally ignoring the fact that my daughter just smoked me. So this guy comes up and he's like, I was just watching you. Is there, like, what's going on? You know, you're not hitting the targets. I'm like, I don't get, there's got to be something wrong with the gun. So he loads up the two pistols, bing, bing, like dead center, bing, 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 right on top of you. Nope, nothing wrong with the gun. Sets them down on the bench. User error. Just walks away. I'm like, buggers.
I did that once too. JT had his nephew who was joining the club. He was just getting his firearms license. We had tee up at the range, and he was shooting one of the club guns. And the club has 6.17 or Model 17 Smith and Wesson, 22 revolver, 6-shot. The gun has to be at least 30 years old. A little scratched up and beat up on the outside, but this thing is a frickin' tack driver. It's a super, super accurate little 22, and it's got a nice trigger. And actually, the week before, I'd actually sent down and I benched it just to dial it in to see what it shoots. And this stupid thing would shoot the X out of the 10 ring. Like, if you benched it, that gun would put the bullet through the same hole all the time. I tried to talk them into selling it, but they wouldn't sell it to me. So Ty goes up and he puts a couple cylinders downrange, and his shots are all over the place. And JT goes, let Tom shoot it. He said, okay. He goes, there's something wrong with the gun. I think the sight's wrong. I said, sure, I'll test it. So I fired 6 shots, all in the black, and then I sat down and I benched it, and it knocked the X out of the 10 ring. So I made the gun clear. I said, nothing wrong with the gun. Operator error. And I walked away because I spent an hour with it the week before dialing it in. That's why I knew that the gun was accurate and it had a nice trigger. That gun is one of the reasons I won Smith & Wesson 22 revolver. It was phenomenal. It was more accurate than almost as accurate as my compensated 22 with the red dot.
The cheater gun.
But if you sat there and you benched it and you put an assault, that's what you do. Like, if you get a gun and it's not shooting for you, it's not accurate, you have to take yourself out of the equation. You're better to get somebody who you know that you can shoot, get them to sit down on a bench on a steady rest so the gun's not moving, take all the motion out of it, and then just see what the gun does on its own. If it shoots tight for somebody that knows how to shoot and somebody that knows how to bench them, then it's obviously not the gun, it's the operator error. And you have to go back to the basic. You're doing something wrong. Either your sight picture is incorrect or your trigger press is incorrect, but it's you, it's not the gun. Because a lot of people go out and they say, you know, they have this thing, well, there was someone on Facebook today, just because you go out and get yourself an AR-15 doesn't make you an operator. Or it's the same way as if you go out and get yourself a Gibson Les Paul guitar, it doesn't make you a guitar player. You just have a guitar. You just have a gun. It doesn't mean that you know how to play the guitar or you know how to properly use the tool that you do have.
Yeah. This isn't gun related, but it's related to the topic. My very first set of golf clubs, the woods were actual wood clubs. And it was a family friend.
Oh, George, how old are you, George? You're older than me?
I think these things were probably older than you. Anyways, so he calls me up and he's like, oh, I'm at this place and they've got a used set of clubs. Are you interested? And I'm like, sure. And he knew his stuff. So if he wouldn't have asked me if he wasn't confident in them. So he's like, all right, well, meet me at the driving range and, you know, give me your money and whatever. So I show up and I'm like, is this a joke? He goes, what? I'm like, those things are probably older than dirt. I said, the woods are actual wood. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. He goes, seriously? He goes, here's my whatever. I can't remember. That was stupidly expensive club. He goes, I'll use the ones I just bought you. You use mine and let's see who can outdrive who. And of course I'm like, it's going like 10 feet and like he's just smoke and they just went and they were gone. And he just looked at me and he's like, it's not the club, it's the person. When your skill level exceeds these clubs, then you go spend money on my clubs. He says, until then, you're just wasting your money. Which is kind of the moral of the story for today's topic, right? Yeah. You can go out and buy all the highest, you know, gizmos and gadgets, top of line rifles and everything else. But if your skill level doesn't match the equipment level, then it's just, you're throwing away money, basically.
Yeah.
Like, but the one thing I have a problem with is striker fired guns, especially factory Glocks. There's nothing wrong with the Glocks. You know, a lot of people shoot them very well. I can't shoot a Glock when I depended on it. I'm telling you. Because the trigger and the pull, I can shoot it. I can keep all shots on paper. I just cannot shoot it as accurately as I can shoot a single action. Same with, I was up with listener Jason a couple weeks ago, and he has an M&P with a factory trigger. My groupings were a lot better than his, but my groupings weren't nearly what I would consider to be good shooting, because it was difficult for me with the grip angle and the trigger press to shoot that gun. Like, sometimes you may not have the proper equipment for yourself. If the gun doesn't fit properly, or sometimes really heavy triggers are difficult for people to shoot, and maybe you can do a little bit better with a, say, a single action compared to a heavy 12-pound trigger. Like, sometimes equipment does make a difference, a little teeny weeny bit. But with me, like M&Ps, anything with a heavy trigger, I have a hard time shooting. Like my revolver, single action, no problem. Double action, unless I drop that double action pull, any long pulls or heavy pulls, I have a hard time maintaining accuracy. But that's me. I know that's my limitation and my skill level with that type of mechanism.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you have the muscular tone of like a 12-year-old girl, Thomas, so.
You know, I'm not going to argue with you, because that's...
you and your little chicken wings.
If anybody that hasn't met me, I'm 6'2", I'm 155 pounds, and Kelly has bigger bones than me. Put it this way. Like, you look at my wrist and look at Kelly's wrist, her wrist bones are bigger than me. Not that she's bigger than me, just my skeleton structure is very small. So yeah.
You treaded that line delicately.
Well, it's just the first example I could think of. Like, I'm not saying that she's a big girl, but when you look at her, like her wrist and my wrist, her bones are bigger.
Keep digging.
I'm going to shut up now.
You can't dig yourself out of a hole.
Keep digging.
But no, you look at my friend Rich across the street. He's like big muscle bodybuilder. His wrist bone's the size of my ankle bone. Just not the meat, just the bone. Just.
Yeah, we get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, on that topic too, though, I remember I went to the range one time and I had taken some new shooters out, and a friend of mine, he's very small in stature. And we went to go shoot the handguns. He kept having, I can't remember if it was failure to eject or failures to feed, but it was one of those kind of situations where I kind of had to tell him, you know, you're not grabbing the gun hard strong enough. And he'd grab it tighter. He'd take a few shots. And then I think there was a bit of fear involved in it, and he was worried about the recoil of it. So he wasn't gripping onto it as tight as he could. And every once in a while he would let his grip go. And the gun would start jamming up.
Yeah, you'd start limp-wristing it.
Yeah. You'd start getting problems with it. But I do also want to say, sometimes it is the gun.
Sometimes.
Sarah has an M&P, and this was years ago. We were shooting it. We had shot, I don't know, probably over 1,000 rounds to it by this point. We went shooting one time, and so Sarah was shooting her gun, I was shooting mine, and I said, like, Sarah just kept saying, like, oh, I just keep pulling my shots to the, I can't remember, to the, we'll say to the left. Like, I just keep pulling my shot to the left. And it's like, no matter how, like, slow and deliberate she was pulling the trigger, her shots were always going to the left. So I grabbed the gun and I started shooting it, and all my shots are going to the left too. And as I'm lining up my sights, I realize it's because the rear sight had drifted off to the side. It wasn't even close to being centered anymore.
Oh, I did that. I did that when, at the Union Club, because where people were putting holes in the floor and the walls, I was actually the one that instigated that everybody should have to qualify to shoot center fire. So everybody qualified. Since it was my idea, I had to qualify too. So on that range, the targets were on wires. So, you know, I line up at the center of the bull, pull the shot. Don't I shoot the wire and knock the whole target stand down? Damn. So we put it back up. After I got laughed at for hitting the wire.
So you pulled a Tim.
Twice in a row. Second shot, same thing. I sight in the bottom of the bull, pull the trigger, bang, I shoot the wire again. And the guys are in stitches, right? And I come back, I got really, really mad, and I realized that on the STI Spartan, the rear sight is held in by two separate pins on each side, and the left pin had actually worked its way out, so the sight was up way on an angle. So I didn't realize that afterwards. I said, just hang on, let me try again. And I put the Spartan away, and I pulled up my Smith & Wesson 1911, bang, 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 all the shots from the block. I qualified. But because, you know, everybody knew that I was a half-decent shot, so that to hit that wire twice, it was hysterical. The guys were in hysterics. Like, I think, what's his name? Brady was on the floor laughing at me, just absolutely laughing, because he knew it wasn't like me to do it. But the sight had actually popped up. So sometimes it is the guy.
Yeah.
That's funny.
So what would you recommend, though, for just, say, someone who maybe didn't have, you know, a bullseye shooter like yourself that could test a gun for them?
Well, if you're by yourself, what you want to do is just eliminate any of your motion. We have a couple of good rests at the club. So if you can do a proper sight picture to make sure that you're actually seeing the sights properly, and then do a proper presentation of your target, whether it's 6 o'clock hold or the dead center hold. But if you get rid of any motion, like a solid rest where you're getting rid of your motion in it, that at least it'll bring your shots closer together. Like, as long as you get rid of the motion of the gun, that will definitely improve your groupings. Then yeah. You know that it's you that's having the problem, not the gun itself.
Yeah, I think that works to an extent, right?
We all don't have access to a ransom rest.
Yeah, I don't. Well, I've told you about the rest at my range, right? The two pieces of plywood that are nailed together.
Yeah, we got one of those too.
Yeah. So, I mean, in a place somewhere like where I am, I don't have a real great option for a rest. And I've tried using it, or honestly, I found that just almost anything that I can find works just as well, just to rest the front of the gun on, just to try and keep it more steady.
Even a sandbag, if you've got a sandbag kicking around, just something that you can put the front of the receiver in to give you a nice settled rest. You know, two pieces of wood nailed together, you're going to get motion there. A good sandbag works well.
Mm-hmm. So what distances would you recommend someone test a gun at?
I usually sight mine in at 23 yards because that's what my range is. Like, to me, there's no point in sighting in for 7 or 10. Well, the 7 and 10 distance, you know, they'll give you your left to right and your elevation a little bit. But once you start shooting to 23, then you're going to get your bullets going to rise or drop depending on the caliber that you're using. So I would sight it in at the distance that you plan on shooting at. There's no point in dialing in at 7 yards and then try shooting at 23 yards because you're going to have the same thing that happened with me with the XGM at first. At 7 yards, it grouped okay. It was acceptable. But at 23 yards, it's like, gee, is it me or is it the gun? So.
Yeah. The problem I have with that, though, is think of someone, an IDPA, they actually just changed the rules and they can get you to do up to a 50 yard shot. Now, my club, you can't even shoot pistols at 50 yards, but at other clubs that I go to, I may have to shoot at 50 yards. So, when I would say 90% of my shots are probably 7 yards or less, but yet I still might need to hit that piece of steel at 50 yards. Where would you say I should sight it in? Or
I would actually buy some sight in targets that are graduated for 50 yards, just like with the maple seed or the apple seed targets. They're smaller targets designed to simulate that distances that you can shoot at 20 yards. So you can get a target that's a much smaller target that's simulated for the longer distances.
Okay. The other consideration, too, I was just thinking of is the ability to see your target at 50, or sorry, maybe not 50, but let's say 20, 25 yards. What style of target would you recommend someone use?
At 20 yards, I would just use, or my range is 23, I would just use a standard bullseye target. Because even your slow fire or your rapid fire target, the target itself is the same size. The black will be a little bit bigger or a little bit smaller. And you know, we're talking pistols here, right?
Yeah, I'm talking pistol.
Okay. Yeah, I would just suggest a standard NRA bullseye target.
So that's just like the rings?
Just the ring, because you've got a big center. And what I usually suggest, the 6 o'clock hold, because black sights, black target, you're not going to be able to see your sights. So if you do a 6 o'clock hold, then you can still see your target. You can still see your front sight. And then you just adjust your elevation to go up to where the center is.
Okay. And what about, what if someone's having trouble being able to focus on their sights and their target at, say, 20, 25 yards?
Then they have to get back to the basics. You really have to, and we all do it. You really, it's sometimes, especially the new shooter, it's, you, I guess it's part of your natural vision to look at the 20 yards, look at the target and the distance. And you really have to train yourself to focus on that front sight. I think that's probably the hardest thing when I'm teaching somebody new to shoot is they automatically want to look at the sight, at the target. And of course your sight goes blurry. So the hardest thing is teaching the front sight focus. If somebody old like myself that's having a problem with the front sight focus, sometimes a red dot's a better option because you're not looking at the front sight, you're looking at the target.
Yeah.
And I'm waiting for George to jump on that one, so he must have his microphone muted.
I do. Sorry, I was looking at the show notes to kind of get prepared for the events. I totally missed what you said.
Were you practicing reading that long letter that you have to read?
No, I was just kind of scrolling through as you were going on and on and on and on and on and on.
And are you bored, George?
No.
Are we keeping you up?
Just any opportunity to take a shot at Thomas.
You know, it's depends on the individual. Like some people. I personally, I prefer plain black sights. Some people find it easier if they just have some illumination, a white dot in the front sight. Some people like lighting up the three dots. The problem with the three dots is that you're not focusing on the sights. You're focusing on the three dots. You're not focusing on the light bars between the sights. You're not focusing on the elevation of the front sight. And it's actually a lot harder trying to line up three individual floating dots than it is to line up three little lines.
Yeah.
So the sights can make a big difference. And it actually made a big difference when Jason was up to the club because he had his groupings definitely improved once I blacked out the rear sights. He found I did black out the front sights and he said he found it easier with the front sight white, but his groupings definitely improved once we did a little adjustments.
Yeah. Yeah. I have the high vis fiber optic in the, just in the front sight for my revolver. And I find it a lot easier to pick up quickly when you're trying to do the action sports and you're constantly, you know, presenting your gun and then pulling it back and presenting your gun. It makes it a lot quicker for being able to find it. And when you don't need to be making bullseye shooting shots, especially the close ups, you know, sometimes you don't even need to see your back sight. You just need to see your front sight.
Yeah. I found with that, like for precision shooting indoors, I like the plain black sights. That my Kimber Gold Match has, but if I'm shooting outdoors, I prefer my STI Spartan because it has the fiber optic front sight. It's just a lot easier picking up the front sight. But then if I want to do precision shooting, then I could just focus on the front sight and not worry about the fiber optics. But yeah, I prefer the fiber optics if I'm competing.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Any other operator error tips?
There's a few things. Like if you're going to the range, a couple of things you should be prepared for. First of all, I'm a really heavy coffee drinker. Don't sit there and drink 6 or 7 cups of coffee and expect to be able to hold the gun very, very steady. If you've had a night of heavy drinking, don't expect to be extremely accurate next day if you've got the shakes. Somebody like myself who is medic, I carry Ventolin and Flovent. The rescue inhaler doesn't affect me, but if I take that purple thing, I get tremors. I shake a little bit. I've noticed that. I made the mistake going to the match one day and I took 2 puffs by mistake. I'm trying to sight on the target and the front side's going up, down, up, down, up, down. But yeah, even sugar, candy, you know, things that you put in your system will affect how you perform downrange sometimes.
Oh yeah.
Clothing makes a difference. Like we talked about it once, shoes. I made the mistake of shooting. I don't know if I could do cowboy action because there's no way I'm going to run around in my cowboy boots and expect to shoot. I find I shoot much better if I've got some nice, firm, ASIC riding shoes on.
Well, have you seen the targets that they shoot at in cowboy? It's like a 2-foot by 2-foot target and they put it 7 yards away And it's not a bullseye. It's all you gotta do is ring it.
You just gotta make it ping. Yeah. Even if you just edge it.
Yeah.
As long as half the time, even if you edge it and you don't really hear the ping,
but you see it move a little bit.
Yeah, or you got enough friends that are judging, they'll give it to you.
I don't think I've ever seen a cowboy run either.
Yeah, that's true too. We just kind of saunter on over to, and it's only like three spots.
Well, considering that most of the people who are doing cowboy action are about 120 years old, I mean,
and 250 pounds.
You start in one position, and then the most you have to do is two more spots, and they're not normally more than 10 feet away from each other, or possibly spread out over that 10 feet.
Yeah.
So you're not covering a lot of distance.
Well, yeah, I know. I'm just bugging you, George. And even the group that Sarah was shooting with, most of the shooters there, I mean, if you take Sarah out, I would say, if not all, most of the shooters had to have been 60 plus. So I have a feeling they weren't exactly going to be, you know, doing a 100-yard sprint to try and shave a few seconds off their score.
Yeah, so. our group's got to be, 50 to 60 range.
Yeah.
You've got most of the guys that are retired and...
Well, that's what I find it is. Like 90% of the people who are out there are all the retired people.
So. Yeah.
God, does that mean when I retire, I have to shoot cowboy action?
Yep. The retirement league of pistol shooting.
That's the three gun retirement league. It's the original three gun. We're the OG of the three guns.
Actually, you're four gun technically.
Wow. Yeah, I suppose.
Well, I can retire in June.
And you have a cowboy club right at your shooting club, so it's almost like it would have to be.
And you can get listener Thomas to take you out and give you some pointers. He's quite the cowboy guy.
Well, apparently, I was listening to the Reloading podcast. They actually had one of the top SAS guys, Evil Roy, was on.
And, yeah, Mike sent me a message.
Yeah, he was suggesting that you stick to 38.357. For your shooting, because even if you download your 44s to 44 specials, you're still at a disadvantage with your muzzle rise compared to the 38s. And my levers were all 44s, so.
Some of those 38s, they have them downloaded to the point where you're like shooting a 22 or less than a 22. They're like, it's ridiculous. There's no muzzle rise at all. There's like no recoil.
I wish I had chronoed some of those rounds that I made for Sarah originally that were so incredibly light that you could barely hear them ping the metal. Because I'd love to have shot them over a chronograph and see if it would have legally been a firearm at that time.
Well, you could probably use an abacus to test, to calculate the feet per second and probably come up with an accurate reading.
Yeah. Well, some of the loads that these PPC guys are shooting, they just shoot, you know, that... that black particle board that you put up for on the sides of houses.
Yeah, like the tar paper?
Yeah, it's like the tar paper, but it's maybe a half inch thick. These guys' loads were actually bouncing off that. That's the only rule, is that it has to pass through the backer for PPC. And some of these loads, you can actually see the bullet go down range and hit the target. So these guys have to have four position front sights because their loads are so soft. You know, if they want to do a body shot, they got to aim for the neck if they don't have the adjustable sights. It drops like 3 feet and 20 yards.
I know. We got a guy at our club that shoots 45s that are like that. I just this is why I have no problems coming in last place, because I refuse to download my 45s because I want to hear a loud bang and a loud ping. And if I'm shooting cowboy, I want to be as authentic as I can to the cowboy days. So I don't download my rounds, so I will never be competitive with these guys. Like, these guys are pulling off like 20-second rounds, and I'm maybe breaking, you know, 50 on a good round.
What's the name of the the group that they shoot 1911s in Cowboy?
Wild Bunch.
Wild Bunch?
Yeah.
Now, do they have to be fixed sights or can you have adjustable sights?
I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, it's, see, the Ruger Velcaros are kind of the Ruger SAS guns, and I believe they have an adjustable rear sight, and do allow those in.
No, that would be the Black Hawk. That would be the Velcaro. The Velcaro has a fixed, a groove in the receiver. I don't believe it has adjustable sights. The Black Hawk does.
Is the Black Hawk, single action? It's not double grip. Single?
It's single action, and there's the Vaquero, and then there's the new Vaquero.
Hmm. Well, I might be wrong then on the adjustable sights being allowed, because I thought the adjustable sights weren't allowed, but then they made an exception for one of the Rugers. I thought it was the Vaquero.
Well, no, Evil Roy did say that there was a one section that you could use the Blackhawks that have the adjustable sights.
In a side match, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. But I enjoyed listening to him. He gave me a lot of information about Cowboy Action I didn't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, with Cowboy Action, there's no real sanctioned shoots. Like all the shoots around Ontario, around me, none of them are actually sanctioned shoots. So, like,
your cowboy hat wouldn't qualify, right?
Nothing in my outfit would qualify. I've never actually gotten around to actually doing my outfit. So, you know, my outfit is like worse off than my AR build.
that one was
for you, Tim.
You could have, you can get away with cowboy boots, jeans, a dress shirt, a vest of some type, a leather vest of some type, and a proper hat.
Yeah.
Does anybody ever dress up as Indians or are they all cowboys?
I know one guy at Sarah's Club always dresses up. He has like an authentic RCMP outfit from like
that time period.
It's like it's from like the time period. It's from the Wild West time period, and he just that's like authentic RCMP outfit.
Oh, that'd be cool.
We have the guy that kind of started Cowboy at our club. His wife's part Indian, and she would always dress up as Indian, and she never shot, but she always cooked the meals. And I always kind of shook my head to myself thinking, this has got to be wrong on some level. There's got to be a PC liberal whose head is exploding at this moment.
Well, I have seen, Shooting SA did cover some of the matches. And some of the women were dressed in native attire from the day. But I didn't see them actual shooting. But if it's from the time period, then again, who wants to wear hot buckskin in the sun all day? It'd be pretty warm.
Well, and in the SAS costume rules, there's nothing really outlining what is acceptable and like what's not acceptable for a cowboy or Indian outfit. So I think if you're at a sanctioned event, I don't think you can dress up as an Indian.
I was just curious.
I don't know. But all this SAS talk, I'm going to say we should almost have a New Shooter Canada cowboy action and see which one of the three of us will do best.
I can tell you it won't be me.
Well, yeah, that's just it. I know I'm guaranteed not to come last, so that's why I'm willing to do this.
You'll come at least first or second.
Yeah.
I don't have any single actions. Do you, Mike?
I don't, but Sarah does.
All I gotta do is make sure that the shooting stages are far enough apart that by time Thomas gets from like the shotgun to the rifle, he'll be so winded from his smoker lung, I might actually have a chance of winning.
I actually set a quit date of February 3rd. I went to my doctor. He said I could use those pills and the patches at the same time. So I set my quit smoking date February 3rd, but I haven't told Terry yet. But I've got the Zyban and I got the patches. I'm going to quit smoking.
Hey, it's let me tell you, your first 2 weeks, man, you're gonna be buzzing. It's like a utopia.
I'm worried about sleeping because the last time I did the patch, I know a lot of people actually wear them to bed because the first time I did it, I couldn't sleep. And I thought about it. Well, I don't smoke while I'm sleeping, so why would I have the patch on when I'm asleep?
Yeah, but I think if you put a fresh one on in the morning, by the time you go to bed, most of the nicotine's been absorbed by that point anyways.
Probably to keep you from waking up in the middle of the night and wanting a cigarette. Or well, waking up first thing in the morning and wanting one.
That's the thing, right? There's probably still enough nicotine that your body's not going to crash as hard as if, you know, because in the morning, that's kind of the smoker's Achilles heel, right? They just went 8 hours without a smoke, and they're jonesing for that cigarette. But if
you I would get up in the morning, I'd open that patch, I'd put it to my nose. I'd inhale it a couple times, then I'd put it on.
He would dip it in his tea and let it steep with his tea.
I never thought of that. That's another thing. I'm gonna have to stop drinking coffee.
Why?
I don't start my day without that coffee. I have at least three coffees, at least three or four cigarettes first thing in the morning.
You know what you do right now, Thomas? Is break that cycle. Before you quit smoking, break that cycle. Whatever your routine is in the morning, start breaking it up now, and it'll make it a lot easier. My routine used to be I'd get up. I lived so close to work, so I would wake up, dive into my clothes, out the door, get to work, grab a coffee, and then go out and have that first smoke. And that was the first thing I did was I delayed that first smoke as long as I could. You know, 5 minutes today, 10 minutes the next day. You know, that might be in 10 minutes, 10 minutes, and 15 minutes. And I broke up that coffee cigarette habit. And it was a huge help in the morning.
So instead of having a coffee and cigarette, maybe substitute it with wild sex instead?
Really? That's what you got out of what I just said? If Terry's up for it, if you can get a little extra action. By saying, babe, I need this. George said I need to do this to help me quit smoking.
Oh, I don't get any action. Never mind extra action.
No, but I'm just saying, if your routine in the morning is to have that smoke with the coffee simultaneously, delay the smoke just by 5 minutes or like halfway through your coffee, then light it up. And then the next day, wait till your coffee's done, then have the smoke.
Actually, that's a good suggestion.
The other problem is we associate our cigarettes, and I was an ex-smoker, or I am an ex-smoker. I used to smoke. This has nothing to do with guns, but anyone out there that's looking to quit, here's my advice, is start breaking those associations. My biggest fear was I was a super heavy smoker when I drank. I used to smoke half a pack a day. If I wasn't drinking, but if I was going out drinking, I'd bring whatever I had left in my pack plus a full pack, and I may have one or two smokes left in the morning. Well, so yeah, that was my biggest fear, was the drinking and the smoking.
I used to chain smoke when I drank. I would be lighting up another cigarette just as that last cigarette was going out.
Yeah, that was almost like me. And the coffee in the morning and the drinking, those were really the only two associations I had to break. But yeah, that would be my biggest recommendation for success, is breaking that association between the two.
Okay, good suggestion.
And won the patch and Zyban, and you'll be higher than a kite for the first 2 weeks.
Yeah, as long as I don't smoke the Zyban, I'm okay.
Swallow the patch and smoke the Zyban, or rub the Zyban on your arm. It's not working. So anyways, good for you, buddy. Good for you. I guess no more old man smoker coughing jokes, eh?
Well, you know, when the doctor told me about, first of all, I've got the aneurysm in my brain. I got a cataract in my eye. I'm winded. I'm falling apart. And I figured, you know, I'd like to live a few more years, so maybe it'd be a good idea.
Never hurts. All right. Well, now that we've totally covered how to quit smoking.
Every time you want a cigarette, go to the range.
You know what's funny? There was twice I tried to quit smoking, and I'd be like, "Well, I'll only smoke what I drink." I was like almost a raging alcoholic.
Then you just find excuses to drink.
Just about. I'm like, "Oh man, I need a smoke. I'm going out for a few minutes. Go down to the bar." Pop back a couple beers, smoke a bunch of cigarettes back home. It's like, okay, that's not working. Then the other thing was golf. Well, I only smoke when I'm on the golf course. And I'm like, Man, it's cheaper just to go back to smoking than to be golfing and smoking. So yeah, those things don't work. There's some people. I had a buddy. The only time he ever smoked was when he drank. I don't know how he did it. Those people are out there, and I hate them.
I had a coworker. The only time she would smoke was at work. As soon as she went home at night or on the weekends or vacation, she wouldn't smoke. She had a young boy. She didn't want her son to see her smoke. That's the only time she smoked.
I loved smoking. I absolutely loved being a smoker. But when I was going through my divorce, it was either buy food, put food on the table, or buy my cigarettes. So fortunately, cigarettes had to go. But, you know, stupid kids need their food. Spoiled brats. Selfish kids.
I've met your kids. They're pretty skinny. I think Dad needed the food.
Maybe George is still secretly smoking and starving his kids. I don't know. My kids are like anorexic thin. It's gross. They certainly don't get that from me. Anyways, events. Moving on. Mike, event number one.
Event number one, AR-15 basic course. This was put on by Ragnarok Tactical on March the 11th. It is being held in Kitchener, Ontario, and the link is in the show notes.
All right. And I believe this is in conjunction with the charity shoot as well, right?
No, this one is not.
Oh, this one is not March 11th, sorry.
Did we mention last week, Mike, what that Ragnarok actually means?
No, we did not.
Okay, I actually contracted Andrew Vincent. I asked him, what does the name Ragnarok mean? And apparently it's the end of days in Norse mythology, the end of the world. That's what it means.
Oh, okay.
I was curious. I thought well, maybe it was somebody's name or something, but there's actually meaning for the term.
All right, event number two, Thomas.
Event two is the Canadian Sportswomen Society and the Real Outdoors Experience present Ladies Intro to Turkey Hunting, Saturday, April 8th, 2017 at the East Algon Sportsman Association, which is located at 9586 Springfield Road, Elmer, Ontario. Space is limited to 20 ladies, cost is $70 per person. That includes ammo, lunch, refreshments, gift bags, door prizes, and a chance to win a fully guided turkey hunt. Deposit is non-refundable $50 required to hold your spot. You can send an EMT to kid33@hotmail.com or for further information, please call 226-923-0193. So that's a good event.
It's out my end of the woods. And
if you're lucky and they don't have enough women, they might let the guy set up again. I don't know. You'd have to actually speak to Lori.
All right. Event number three, Manitoba Mounted Shooting Association is putting on a mounted shooting clinic. And it's so bloody small, the picture, I can't read it. It's April 22nd from 10 till 4. Cost is, hold on while Mike makes it bigger.
$120,
or Mike can read it. The show notes are going off my phone, so it's like super tiny. I can't read the rest. Check the link on the show notes.
If you're interested, contact Angie at 204-298-7533 or email at Manitoba Mounted Shooters, that's plural, at gmail.com to confirm your spot.
Thank you, Mike.
No problem.
That's the Mounted Shooting Clinic.
Yeah.
Next up, we have the Canadian Airgun Grand Prix is on May 5th, 6th, and 7th, 2017. And I believe Mary is going to be on this. Actually, she's going to be on the show next week.
Two weeks now,
she's coming on the show. So maybe she can give an update. This is the 35th annual Canadian Airgun Grand Prix, one of the largest international airgun competitions in North America. And all the events will be at the new Pan Am Shooting Range, which I've never checked up to. So actually, give me a chance. I'm going to make a point to go see this so I can actually meet Mary because we've never actually met her. The main shooting range is for this event features 50 positions for air rifle and air pistol, including positions for adapted athletes. So they probably have disabled shooting positions. So if for additional information and letters of invitation, please contact Sherry Ako, who's registered at her email address is sakow@dwpv.com. That's just like my eye test. Read those tiny letters.
All right. Event number five.
Event number 5 is the Carbine Operator Course on July 7th. This is the one that's right before the charity shoot, and it's also being put on by Ragnarok Tactical in Kitchener, Ontario. Price is $176.99 plus theft, and the link to the Facebook page is in the show notes.
And the next day after that, on July 8th, is the 7th easier said than done. The 7th annual Canadian Podcasters Charity Shoot. Slow down, George. That will be Saturday, July 8th from 9 till 6 at the Guelph Rod and Gun Club. And the link will be in the show notes.
And last but not least, there is the Lone Butte Practical Shooters presents the Redneck BC 3-Gun Championship. Out in BC, and this one's really small too.
It's as big as I can blow it up.
That's what she said.
Thomas for the win! Way to go, Thomas.
Matchy's $100. It's $125 if you apply after June 25th. The prize table got dropped. Stop laughing, George. You can't read when you laugh. If you register before May 1st, you get entered to win your hotel room for free, which is a great deal. Cover the cost of the match. Trying to find the address here, the link.
It's at the bottom.
If you're interested, you can email Brian at, I can't read that, para40@bcinternet.net.
Or you can just click on the link in the show notes.
Yeah, you look in the show notes. We have all links for everything since we can't read. These are so small. I'm going blind.
Oh, I'm going to stop crying. Oh, I'm dying, crying. Wait, listener email. Okay, Splatter. So here we go. Mike butchered one. I butchered the next one. So now it's up to Thomas to get it right.
Cool. I read the first one and I didn't butcher it.
No, I read it.
Oh, the first one?
Okay. Yeah, I did.
Yeah, then I butchered it last week.
Okay. Subject, danger, Will Robinson, danger. Brothers, your reading of my email has been hugely amusing. Here's another one. I guess he did listen to you guys read his letters. On the gun case topic, and this is deadly serious, have a reading of RV...
R versus.
I know. I'm trying to be like George. RV... Fikawa decision, the Supreme Court, Ottawa, 1993. The decision is specifically on what constitute a concealed weapon. In short, wrapping a rifle in a jacket or blanket or using, supposedly disguising the probable content, such as a guitar case, is a concealed weapon and a criminal offense code or criminal code offense. And yes, I'd be happy to tell my stories, Splatter. And he has a link to the ruling on there. Before George says something, because I know he put something in here, he's right. Actually, Kevin mentioned this to us at one point too. On one point though, 1995, the Criminal Code, Firearms Act changed the Criminal Code of Canada. And prior to 1993, the firearm was not considered a weapon under the Criminal Code. The weapon was based upon intent. With the introduction of BCL 68, it changed Section 94 of the Criminal Code to where a firearm is automatically considered a weapon. Under the Criminal Code before, it wasn't. Everything else is considered the tent, knives, whatever. But under the Criminal Code, a firearm is now a weapon. Also, in Bill C-68, it does specify that when transporting a firearm, the case has to be opaque in nature so nobody can see what's in the case. So if you've got a good lawyer, because the Criminal Code, it's automatically a weapon. You're not concealing a weapon. You're transporting a firearm. And because the Firearms Act says that it has to be in case and it can't be visible through the case of what it is. If you had a good lawyer, you have a good chance. If you're purposely concealing it, that's another story. But even if you get some of the gun cases, for example, look like gun cases. I've got other cases that look like a keyboard case. Some of the takedown rifle cases don't say anything on it. Some will say the manufacturer on it. So, you know, now that we have Bill C-68 and it tells us how the cases have to be, you might have a little bit more leeway, especially if you had an attorney like Mr. Friedman or Mr. Berlew, because you're not disguising it. You're just transporting it in a different case. There's nothing that says in the Firearms Act that you have to transport your firearms in a designated rifle case, because we all know our pistol cases don't look like pistol cases. Like, people see a case that we use for transporting our handguns. They're similar to the cases that I use for my camera equipment. So you don't know whether I've got a camera equipment in there or I've got a pistol in there. So if I put my pistol in the same case that can be used for a camera case, am I concealing a weapon because I'm using a similar case when the case could be used for both? I think now with Bill C-68 and the changes to the criminal code, you'd have a little bit more, a better chance of actually beating something like that. But I have heard of this court decision, and he is right. If you purposely conceal it so it doesn't look like a firearm, and then when you're transporting it, anything you do have a firearm, it has to be out of sight so nobody can see what it is. So if you've got your firearm in a suitcase compared to a gun case, you're not concealing it. You're just transporting it in an available case. So.
Yeah. And it's also hard to say whether it's a gun case or not, because I would say besides a select few cases, most of them aren't necessarily advertised as a singularly a gun case. Like, even if you look at Pelican cases, which are considered to be like the highest end gun cases you can find, there lots of them aren't actually advertised as gun cases. They're just, here's a case, here are the dimensions. If you fit a gun in it, great. If you fit your camera equipment in it, great. It's just a case.
Yeah. It's just the only time like you can really say if it's a rifle case, if it looks like a rifle case, if it's getting big because it's got room for a scope and everything else. But I think nowadays you'd have a good chance of beating it. I'm not advising that people keep their ARs in guitar cases like I do, but it's the only case the AR fits in with the huge high optic that I have. So.
Yeah.
My turn?
Your turn.
Yeah. Okay. Because I completely disagree with both of you guys. Because the second link is a 2006 case that references back to the 1993 case. And it brings up the issue you guys were just saying. And, so before I get to that, I'll just read my analysis here, what I got written down. So from the website, so the first one, which is the lexum.com, which is basically a transcript of the 1993 case. This is one of the paragraphs I found was interesting. A person who carries a firearm in a case or tightly wrapped in canvas, as required by some provincial regulations on the transportation of firearms for hunting, does not contravene section 89 of the code, which is section 89, I believe, is the concealed weapon code section of the code. Firearm carried in that manner generally resembles the firearm itself and cannot be considered to be hidden. As well, placing a firearm in a locked trunk or out of sight in a locked and unattended vehicle, in compliance with federal regulations on the storage, display, handling, and transportation of certain firearms, cannot be construed to be, quote, carrying a concealed weapon, end quote. So your basic storage and transportation, so hiding the gun in your trunk, they're saying that's not considered concealed storage. Rather, the federal regulations designed to protect the public from the danger of stolen weapons should be seen as a exception to Section 89 offense. These regulations and Section 89 must be construed in a manner that avoids conflict and promotes the goals of both provisions. The provincial regulations requiring a firearm to be locked in the luggage compartment of a vehicle if the firearm is not encased or wrapped does not conflict with Section 89. So that's just what I just said. So as long as the firearm is locked in that compartment in the circumstances outlined in the federal regulations. Finally, a firearm which breaks down and is carried in a case, then this is the part where I disagree with you guys. Finally, a firearm that breaks down and is carried in a case that resembles a briefcase should not be considered concealed. And here's the part. If the carrying case is clearly marked as a firearm case. So now this is my commentary. So according to this paragraph, so the first paragraph I read was basically saying if you're storing it in your car, hiding it in your car, that sort of thing, because of the laws of transportation and that, you're exempt from Section 89, which is a concealed weapon. But this last paragraph where it says if the carrying case is clear, if you have it in a briefcase, it's not considered concealed if, and that's a big word, the carrying case is clearly marked as a firearm case. So according to this pair, this is my analysis, and I'm not a lawyer, I'm not a pro, this is just my own reading of what I read. So according to this paragraph, I have to put something on my briefcase to say that I have pistols inside, like a bunch of question marks, because that's exactly what I use to transport my two pistols.
But it also says a firearm which does not break down. So it's talking about a long gun here.
Well, I think that's splitting hairs. A firearm's a firearm, right?
Exactly.
And if it's in a briefcase and I don't have something, see, this is where I it doesn't make any sense to me. So if I just read that paragraph the way it's written, in a sense, I have to write guns inside on my briefcase, which is kind of stupid because, like Thomas pointed out, there's a reason why we have to have an opaque case so that people can't see what's inside. Yeah. So the next thing I have from the website is here the mens rea, which is your intent, of the offense was clearly established. The accused, knowing the rifle was – oh, I guess I should explain. What happened was the guy was out shooting, and they went to get on a public bus. And he was worried that if he just walked on with basically open carrying the rifle, it would cause a public disturbance. So he wrapped it up in his jacket so as to not cause public disturbance. And they're saying because he knew, he was well aware of the fact that wrapping it up was, you'd have to read it. But anyways, where was I? So the accused, knowing the rifle was a weapon, took steps to hide it from observation by others. His excuse that he concealed his rifle in order to avoid alarming the passengers on the train could not constitute a defense. And then this is my commentary. So what I'm getting out of this is because he didn't want to cause public alarm by open carrying, he's guilty of concealed carry. So should he have open carry? This is a question. Seems odd to me, but like I said, I'm no lawyer. So this guy did a bit of wrong, because when he was confronted by the, it says a train, but I thought he was on a bus. Anyways, when he was, an employee had come up and he had kind of, he made an off-color joke saying that he was going on a shooting spree, which I can't believe they let him off the hook for that, because that was such a stupid thing to say.
That's what soaked him right there.
Well, no, they let him off the hook on that. The judge, if you read it, the judgment against him states that they believe that he had no intent, that it was just, he was just as ill-willed as it was. He was joking around. So, I don't know. This, Splatter sent this, and I'm assuming because I made the comment about using a guitar case for an AR-15 and how cool that would be. So now after reading this, I definitely would not. I think the
difference is that when I put my AR-15 in the case, it's going from my home to my car to the range and back again. I'm not taking it out in public. I'm not intending on taking it someplace, disguising it as someplace else. I'm actually using it as a gun case. It's got padlocks on it and it's in a locked case. And I don't take it in public areas. It's just to and from the range.
Yeah.
I'm not taking it out and disguising it as something else and going out in public or taking it on a bus and going someplace. I'm transporting it legally to and from the range where it goes in the trunk, where it's legal in the trunk anyway, and it just goes to and from and back again.
Yeah.
I can see, sure, if you're out in public and I decide I'm going to take my AR downtown Toronto to my friend's house, which is illegal anyway. You know, if you're public.
If you're taking public transport, like say you live in Toronto and there's a range, your range is in Toronto, and you, like I'm assuming there's probably lots of people in Toronto that don't own cars. They just use, you know, the subway and the bus and the GO trains, right? So it could be very realistic that somebody in Toronto were to take their AR-15 on public transit because that may be their only way of mode of transportation. So if they get on with a guitar case with an AR in it, say something happens and whatever, the police want to see the guitar. I don't know why, but whatever. I'm just saying the way I read this, you could be in trouble for a concealed weapon.
But
because it's in a case that is not going to immediately portray a gun case.
Well, then here's my thought.
To portray something else.
You say all you have to do is indicate that it is. You said at one point that you just have to indicate that it is a case for a gun, per se.
Yeah, that's what that one paragraph says.
Could I not take, for example, the SIG sticker and stick it on there? All it says is SIG. It's the SIG logo. So if a cop ever came up, you can say, hey, this has SIG's logo right on it. That indicates that it's a gun case. But at the same time, to anyone who's not a gun person would just see a sticker that says SIG on it, and they would have no idea what it means.
I could see that as passing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if you test it against that paragraph, which says, in a case that resembles a briefcase or guitar case, I suppose you could substitute, could not be considered concealed if the carry case is clearly marked as a firearm case. Yeah. So if you have SIG on it, which is a firearms manufacturer.
Yeah. And think, when you get a case when you buy a new gun and it comes with a case, they always embed their logo into the plastic case because they want their logo all over everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, does that mean that pretty much take an off brand? I wouldn't say take Smith & Wesson or Glock because they're well known brands, but take a brand that maybe, or at least if their logo isn't immediately recognizable as a gun manufacturer, take that, stick it on every case, and you'll never have a problem.
Yeah. So like I said, we are not lawyers, so don't. This is all an opinion piece here.
And the other point is too. I was telling you guys a few weeks ago. I was at Wilson Subway Station working, and a gentleman went over to Walmart. They had a sale on the plastic gun cases. They even had the Walmart baggies tied around the handle to show that he bought them at the store. Somebody called in as a gun call because he had two gun cases on the subway station, and he got taken down by the SWAT team. So, because nowadays, even the presence of a gun case on public transit will get you taken down.
Well,
and it's actually illegal now it's against TTC bylaws in the city of Toronto to transport firearms on a public transit now.
I was going to say, I think most public transportation has their own rules that say you cannot transport a firearm on it.
Never used to be. I used to, like George's dad, I used to take public transit shooting all the time when I was in grade 5, grade 6, my rifle in the case, all through Air Cadets, I took it down. But once Mayor Miller found out that there was a handgun range at Union Subway Station, then it dawned on them, oh, well, people are taking the TTC to go shooting, which they did. You know, they had their pistol cases, and they would go down to the Union Subway Station for the last 75 years. But all of a sudden, the fear kicked in. Oh, guns on transit, which they've been doing since I can remember. And now they're all banned. You can't bring a firearm.
Oh, see, I would never have known that.
Yeah.
So, all right. Next one, Mike.
Okay. Next email. Hey, guys. Just got to listen to your episode about cases, and you were spot on about the different types and what they have for advantages and disadvantages. I want to write a quick note to expand on the AR wall locker that I'd sent to Thomas. I have a Hornady pistol box that automatically opens when you hold an RFID bracelet or tag to the top of it. And this AR locker has the same lock, and multiple locks can be paired to the same tag that opens that pistol box. That has me excited because I could stage a rifle for home defense and in Iowa, I only have to secure the rifle from my 2-year-old getting to it. I looked around, and this locker might be better to meet Canadian requirements. And he sent a link, and I put the link in the show notes. And this is the Hornady Rapid AR Gun Locker. And I looked at this, and this looks like everything I've ever wanted.
Oh, really?
It is.
I just looked at the letters. I haven't had a chance.
It's small and narrow. It's meant so that you can hold up to two long guns with the insert, I guess you could call it, and stand them up. Or you can put one in it, laying down on its side. And it is what I would define it as safe. It is made of very thick metal. It's not, you know, your Walmart cheap $100 safe. It comes with the whole equipment to bolt it down or secure it to something. And like he said, you can either use the RFID open switch, or there's even a combination built right onto it. So if this is a legal safe, it means you could stage something like an AR, a restricted rifle, inside of it with no trigger lock, and it would be perfectly legal. Not to mention, you could probably put a magazine sitting right beside it inside the safe.
Mm.
So, to me, this seems like the, I mean, pretty much as good as you're ever going to get for Canadian laws if you want a stage rifle without having a, you know, a 10, you know, a 300-500 pound safe sitting in your, I don't know, wherever you want to stage your firearms.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'll put a picture in the show notes so I can see it.
I put the link in there. All you have to do is you drag your mouse over top of it, holding it down, and it's what they call highlighting.
Oh, now
it. Yeah. Okay. Then you can right click on it and you press the button that says copy.
That's what that does. Okay. Jeez. Well, I know you're going to put the picture in anyway for listener Terry, since we put all the pictures in now because of him. So
I put the link in. So anyway, I forgot to mention that was, it says, keep up the great show, guys. Heinrich.
Thanks, Heinrich.
Yep. Thank you. That's awesome. That's a great link. I'm excited about it. Now all I need to do is find out how much one of those will cost for me up here in Canada.
Cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching.
Yeah. I thought you guys needed a bigger safe for all your guns. Now you want to get a smaller safe just for the one gun?
Well, why are you so against different size safes? I like big safes and I like small safes. I like all safes, Thomas.
Thomas, you're a sizist. Don't be such a sizist. Stop sizing. Your sizism is not acceptable on this show.
My safe is bigger than your safe.
Yeah, but mine blows up to be bigger than both of yours put together. So, next one is from my buddy Terry out in Saskatchewan, the land of the Rough Riders. What type model? I don't know if this
come was on, Tom, it's one line.
It's one sentence, George.
What type model and price range for a scope that is okay for a Savage? And then I put in brackets, he's buying a Savage Axis.
What caliber do you know?
The one that the Axis comes in? I don't know. Does it come in 22? I think he's getting a 22.
I don't think it no. comes...
It doesn't come in rimfire.
No, I don't think it comes in 22.
I'm assuming Terry is going to hunt with the rifle. So, he's smart. He's smart for riding in because, you know, these, if you got one of the package guns, it comes with those really cheap $50 scopes that we always tell you to throw in the garbage. Don't bother with it.
That I've never done and kept and leave on my rifle.
Well, what I would recommend, first of all, is not buying an NC Star, a Leaper, a Simmons, any blister pack, house brand from Bass Pro or Cabela's. Don't buy Beriska, Tasco, and Simmons.
Come on. You know, it would only be $50.
I said, I really don't know much about scopes, but I'll add it to the show notes because Thomas knows everything and he might even know something about this. And I said, I have a cheap Tasker on mine. I said, and it's never done me wrong. And here's a stay away from Tasco.
Didn't you strip the screws out a couple times?
No. I know Mike broke his.
Yeah. It was either Tasco or, what's that other brand that Canadian Tire carries? Anyway, the reticle literally broke out from inside the scope.
Yeah, I think McClatchy's front lens actually popped off his NC Star too. Well, it's funny because remember meeting my young friend Russell came out to the charity shoot, and yes. He asked me the same thing. He was looking at the Simmons Predator. It was like a 3x18 or something they had up at LeBaron's, and he was asking about scopes because he really liked that type of magnification. So what I said, because they didn't have a big selection up there. They had the Bushnells, and well, they're no longer in business, but they had quite a few Bushnells and the Simmons. And I asked him what his price range. He said around $250. I said, well, you know what to do? Go up to LeBaron's, actually ask them to see the Simmons and actually look through it. Look around the store, look at the brightness, focus at different objects. And I said, you're going to see it's not really clear. The edge-to-edge clarity is not going to be there. And I said, then pick up a Bushnell in the same price range. and you're going to see a world different. You're going to see it a lot clearer, a lot more light transmission, because it's a higher quality. I'm thinking, you know, Terry bought the Savage Axis because it's of its price range, and they are really the best bang for the buck. I have a Savage Axis myself, and I bought the package gun, and that scope went in the garbage as soon as I saw it. But it is a tack driver. That thing will shoot minute of angle at 100 yards. When I first bought it, it didn't like the Hornady white-tailed. It didn't like the Remington. And then I put some Winchester Super X. I was getting half-inch groups at 100 yards with this stupid thing. So it's an accurate rifle that does deserve a half-decent optic. So a couple I would recommend around the $250 price range. Up here, the Vortex Diamondbacks, they're really popular. You'll never find them on sale for some reason. You hunt around, they go for around 250. They never drop the price. And I'm assuming a 3x9. If you got it for hunting and you're going to be, most shots are going to be under 100 yards. So you don't really have to worry about parallax because just a 3x9 that's going to stay on there just for deer hunting. You don't really need a lot unless you're going to do long range target shooting. Then your needs are going to be a little bit different. But Nikon Pro Staff, Vortex Diamondback, some of the Bushnells are good. Except the Banner line. Don't touch the Banner line. They're bottom of the line. The Banner line is just above the cheap one that came with the gun. Barris has a new drop line out that I haven't seen, or you can go up to their E1 series, but they're about $400 now. If you go up a little bit more, Leopold has one for about $300-$400. I would suggest, I would spend at least what you paid for the rifle. Between $250 and $450, anything by Nikon or Vortex or Burris should do the trick. What about you, Mike? Do you have any suggestions?
No, I do not have. I don't think I even have any magnified optics anymore since my one on my 22 broke. Everything I have is pretty much just a red dot.
And the other thing I would suggest is get yourself a good set of rings to go with it.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, have you ever been to Saskatchewan, Thomas?
Is that where he is?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. You can you can stand on the Manitoba border, and if you squint a little bit, you can see Alberta. So
yeah. So
his hunting might be beyond 100 yards. Just saying.
Well, I mentioned these particular 3x9s because the parallax is 100 yards or more.
Yeah.
He's not going to be shooting here in Ontario where you might have a 50-yard shot or something else. So anything that has a parallax 100 yards or more probably do for him. Most people, just for hunting big game, they usually go for a 3x9. I like something, I prefer a little more magnification myself. That's just my preference. Other people like a fixed 4-power. I don't find a 4-power to be good for me at 100 yards. I find a 3x9 usually does a trick. You can get a 3x12, but as you go up in magnification, then your price goes up a little bit. And you go on parallax settings, that's going to go up a little bit. But I recommend these particular brands, because they all have fully multi-coated optics. The Nikon Pro Staff actually has about the best light transmission of them all. I think it transmits like 98% of the light, where the Bushnells tend to be about 93. If I take my Pro Staff and I put it beside my Bushnell, you can definitely notice the Nikon has a little bit brighter and a little bit crisper, clear edge. But it all depends on his budget.
Yeah. I'll drop this Thomas Picks list into the show notes, so anyone who's listening to this, who's trying to listen to it 10 times over to hear what Thomas' favorites are, or to stay away from, just go to the show notes.
Or if Terry just wants to message me, I can go through them with him. I can make some more suggestions, because I don't know what his budget will be. If he wants to go 500 or 600 or a little bit more, like the Leopold's really good. There's some nice optics out there. It just all depends on your budget. Normally people say whatever you spend on the rifle, spend double on the optics. He might not be able to spend double.
And he's just getting, this is going to be his first gun. He just got his PAL, took the course. So,
well, I you know, honestly,
and he is married, so there is the wife factor too, right?
you can't go wrong with the Nikon Pro Staff or the Vortex Diamondback. They're both excellent scopes for the money. They really are.
All right, so we got to get this moving on, so Mike can get to work tonight. Last one, Mike.
Last one. Hello, gents. It has been a long weekend, and I'm too tired to type the usual praise, so please insert the usual adulation and compliments here. Is your podcast on Google Play Music? I unsuccessfully searched for it recently. If it is not listed there and you are interested, blow over the required steps. I hope to see your podcast there. Your devoted listener, Thomas.
So, and if this is Thomas S., he's our SaaS listener.
Oh, he's our SaaS listener. Okay. Do you know if we're on...
I've never heard of Google Play.
Okay.
Music Play. So
hopefully in the next couple of weeks we'll be up there. How about that?
Yeah, Thomas is Baron's father that we had on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's, like Santa said, there's so many Thomases, you lose track of them.
Yes. All right. So please send any feedback, questions, or comments you may have to host@newshootercanada.ca, our Facebook page, or in our comments section on our website at newshootercanada.ca. And we have some iTunes reviews, which I will let Mike read because, like,
oh my God, I need a magnifying glass for those.
I don't think a magnifying glass would work.
So we actually got three new 5-star reviews, and two of them left a message. So the first one is from WA002, and it says, second to Slamfire, LOL, but still entertaining on its own in its own way. And then the second one, titled Knowledgeable and Entertaining, is from Terry. I'm not sure. How do you say his last name? Genero. If you're new to shooting, then this is the place for you. The hosts are entertaining and knowledgeable on all areas and types of firearms. Keep up the hard work. Can't wait to hear from Santa this year. Maybe George will get his own shotgun this year.
I still got to get hold of S&J and get Wanda sent away. She still wants a pink shotgun, so it's coming back pink.
Yep. So thank you to everyone who gave us the iTunes reviews, and please leave us a review, and we'll read on the air.
And thank you, everyone, for writing in. We really adore your letters, especially Splatter. You're more than welcome to write us anytime. We appreciate your insight.
Even if we do mess up your email every week.
And let's be honest, I bring the pure comedy gold.
Yeah.
Hey, you know my Chuck Norris thing? We did get a listener that wrote in and appreciated it. So at least one person out there appreciated it. So Facebook likes, we're up to 1028 as of today, which is kind of, you know, today could be any day. Could be yesterday, could be tomorrow, but as of today,
1028. As of today, because you read it today.
Exactly. All right, shout outs. My shout out is to Chris Anderson for, being that creepy guy on Facebook. You know the creepy guy I'm talking about? That creepy guy that creeps other guys' wives. And let's be honest, dude. Where the heck are you going to find any camels in Toronto? So that's my shout out.
Well, he's one of those furrier guys that dress up as animals. So he actually might know quite a few camels.
But he's going to need to know pairs. Because you need at least two people to fill that costume.
My shout out is to the FedEx driver who saved two American flags from being burned in protest and will be able to keep his job, the company said on Saturday. On Thursday, Matt, still wearing his FedEx uniform, walked into a group of protesters in Iowa City, grabbed an American flag before they could burn it. And when they started to attempt a second flag, he showed up with a smoke extinguisher and he took that flag too. And then following the incident, all he said is that it doesn't reflect the, does not relate, it does not, he's not representing his employees. And after a scuffle, two protesters were actually arrested for violating the city's burn ordinance. So shout out to Matt.
My shout out is to Wes and Trevor. After the excitement of Sarah giving me that new shotgun had subsided a little bit, I went and I wanted to see how many shells I could actually fit in it of 2 3/4. When I went to do it, I could only fit 5 in the tube. So I had I wouldn't call it a panic moment, but I didn't want to have to go back to Sarah and say the wrong one. So I ended up messaging Wes and Trevor, and they had both got back to me and reassured me that it had to do with the caliber that your receiver is able to fit, and not the not necessarily the number on your barrel. Pretty much, I could interpret it the same way that you can fit a Hopal 223 in a 50 Beowulf magazine, and it's legal because the magazine was stamped for 50 Beowulf. I really appreciate it, and they both gave me pretty much almost the same suggestion to go to, I can't remember what his name is, but send it off to Tactical Ordnance, where he will, I guess, slick the whole system up. To make
Yeah, I've heard about him. He does some nice stuff.
Yeah, and that's just it, right? When you get, I actually shot Wes's gun when I was at Manitoba. He let me, I just shot a whole pile of clays from one of the three gun stages with a shotgun, and yeah, it is one nice shotgun. So I'm super excited about that. So thanks to Wes and Trevor for, coming to me so I didn't have to go back to Sarah and tell her that she had gotten me the wrong shotgun. And thanks again. Thanks again to Sarah for being the most awesomest wife ever, buying me a shotgun.
I concur.
Yeah.
And just
only because Wanda and I aren't married yet.
How many years have you two been married?
It's been 4 years now.
And how many guns has she gotten you so far?
How many has she bought me?
Yeah.
One.
Well, now, that's awkward.
Now, how many have I bought her? I bought her at least two. I bought her first handgun, and I bought her semi-auto shotgun last year? No, a couple of years ago.
Well, the one advantage of having a wife that has her license, and when you get married as long as I've been married, is that your safe will be full by the time you're my age, and you'll have to buy another safe and another safe and another safe. So down, it's just going to get better and better. You've seen how many guns are in my basement. 90% of those were bought for me by somebody else. Well, not including the ones that I won, but.
And how many years have you been married for, Thomas?
29 and. Hold on. Maybe it's 30 this year. it'll be 29 because we got married a year after I was sober. I got 30 years sobriety in January. So I usually get one for my birthday. I usually get one for Christmas. I actually got them for my anniversary too. So
awesome.
My safe is 23 cubic feet. I'm running out of space. I got to start emptying the ammo cabinet. I need more room for guns.
Yeah.
Wanda bought me.
So in 30 years, Mike, you're going to have a nice collection with a girl like that.
Oh, yeah.
Wanda bought me, I think it was a 40-inch TV for my birthday. And she looked at me. She goes, yes, I'm setting a precedent for my birthday next year. So she's getting a Muddy Girl Camo 1022 next year.
Well, that's not much of a surprise now.
Well, she's asked
for that's what she wanted, so.
Because didn't she get it? She got a gift certificate from Bullseye, right?
Yeah. I just said to her, I said, do you know where that gift certificate is? Because it's going towards your birthday gift. So she goes, yeah, I think I remember where it is. And I'm like, oh my goodness, that's like freaking $100. You better know where it is. So then she texted me, it was one day last week, and she's like, yeah, it's exactly where I thought it was. So not only will I be buying her a Ruger 1022, but I'll be getting $100 off thanks to Bullseye.
Thank you.
Which, because she still doesn't have her pal, will be sitting at my place, which I will make sure I get lots of use out of.
When's her birthday?
Maybe by then she'll have gotten her license.
Hopefully.
Maybe instead of buying her a gun, you should be paying for her to go get her license.
That's what I was suggesting. I was just going to say.
Whose side are you guys on?
Not yours.
I'm buying a gun.
Not yours.
No, not yours.
I'm buying a gun.
She's a lot cuter than you, George. Yeah, face it.
Have you seen
and she smells better, too.
I've been working out. I got some sexy, sexy legs. I got calves. Front walnut. Poor Mike. Want me to wrap this up, Mike?
Yes, but I've got a cougar-like physique at 155 pounds and 6'2". I'm streamlined. I can just run, fly through everything.
Yeah, I got nothing. So until next week, keep your barrels pointed downrange and smoking.
Take your kid shooting.
Time spent at the range is time spent with family. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Hello, folks.
That's what I was going for. Catch you next week.
Well, I really like 22 Mag.
Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you with any questions or feedback you may have, or if you just want to call shenanigans. You can contact us at host@newshootercanada.ca or through our Facebook page.
I like the way they look. I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small. They're for sale until I want them all. I like guns. I like guns. I like guns.
Dash back with a loaf of bread with a nickel.
I can't remember a loaf of bread was a dime.
I could go to the cinema and get a popcorn for 2 pence.
When I was in grade 5, for a dollar, we could get into the Saturday matinee, see 2 movies, and still get a pop and a popcorn. It was 50 cents to get in, and there was no tax.
Thomas, you just keep feeding them to me, buddy.
But this was like 1972.
Oh, my goodness. I wasn't even born yet.
Neither was I.
When I was 16, my allowance was $2. And I could walk up to gas stations and I could get a pack of cigarettes at 15. And I could get in the beer store at 15 because I was always so tall. I could get a 6-pack and a pack of cigarettes for $2. What are you going to do, Fogler and Lighthearted?
For the life of me, I can't think of his, I know he does the stutter thing all the time. But boy, what are you up to now?